Blog Talk Radio.
Well, here we go, ladies and gentlemen, across the airwaves. It was archived last week. We're ready to go live this week. It's a show that's sweeping Saturdays. Before you start your day, you got to get a load of this show, the Doc Talk Podcast, hosted by a brother, a mentor, and a friend to me, Dr. Greg Roscoe, in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. Yours truly, Mark Mancini, producing this in Los Angeles, 347-205-9631. I know it's lit up now with 110 of you. Hold tight. We'll get to you. An hour goes by quick. But if you missed this show, catch the archive, blogtalkradio.com/Mancini Sports, podcast platforms, wherever you subscribe to podcasts, powered now by Mancini Media. So without further ado, more of him, less of me. Let me lay the red carpet down, put the podium in its place, hand off the mic. First of all, Doc, how are you? Second of all, how can people get a hold of you? And third of all, you're bringing a lady in here that's going to probably blow this show completely up today. So blessed to produce it. I'll run the board and give it to you, my friend.
Mark, thank you very, very much. Mark, I'm doing well. Our show is doing well. I've received a lot of emails in the last 2 weeks, which is a real good sign. To get a hold of me, GJRMD308@outlook.com. You know, today, you know, we've had big topics. Today we have a big topic, but we've got a big guest. And we have a phenomenal woman with many life's experiences, very well educated, very well trained. This woman's on a mission. Her name is Marilyn Morales. And Marilyn, you know, has a tremendous resume here, but she's an RN to start with. So she's got medical training. Marilyn, you're an owner of a Wellness Connect. Can you tell us about that?
Hi, good morning, Dr. Greg. Good morning, Mark. This is a company that I just started this year. It's called M&M Wellness Connect. The purpose of that is to connect people who are in search of alternative methods of healing due to stress, trauma, PTSD, grief, to connect them with other practitioners that can help them on their journey of healing.
Wonderful. And that's just part of your life. You know, Marilyn, part of Brandywine Living, where you're an operations manager of many facilities, I understand. You're also a Reiki master. You also have a book coming out in January, When the Answer is No, Finding Purpose Through Pain. Tremendous things. And, you know, as far as starting the show, this month, which is another big portion of this show, is National Bone Marrow Awareness. And, Marilyn, we're going to talk about the National Bone Marrow Registry, correct? And about part of that is what? The Be the Match Registry, which you're very much a part of, correct?
That is correct.
Yeah, why don't we start? Let's talk about National Bone Marrow Awareness. Marilyn, what's that all about? What's the purpose? Who are we helping, you know, with this awareness here? What are the problems we're trying to help solve? Can you help me with that?
Absolutely. So every 3 minutes, someone in the United States is being diagnosed with a blood cancer. That is not only leukemia, that is your lymphomas, that is your multiple myelomas, so a whole host of different blood cancers. Imagine that, every 3 minutes. Worse than that is that every 9 minutes, someone is being away because of a blood cancer. So the purpose of the Be the Match Registry, that is our national United States registry. It's the largest, the world's largest and most diverse registry of potential donors, is it collects people who are willing to donate their life-saving bone marrow to someone in need. A lot of these patients need a transplant because their own marrow, which is what produces your red blood cells, your white blood cells, your platelets, the things that you need to live, it's not producing it normally or abnormally in the case of cancers or in conditions like anemia, certain kinds of anemia. So for your quality of life and for you just to live, you need these cells. And if that yours don't work, you will need someone else's. You will need a transplant of that to be given to you so so that your body can begin to produce healthy cells. So that is what Be The Match does. It matches up people with donors.
Marilyn, you know, with regard to your interest in this, how did you get interested in doing something like this, increasing awareness? Can you talk about your personal experiences that got you here?
Yeah, absolutely. It's actually, unfortunately, a tragic story of personal tragedy. In 2007, I had a beautiful baby girl named Isabella, who at the age of 7 months old was diagnosed with leukemia, but not just a regular leukemia that everyone hears about, but a very rare leukemia that is rarely heard. It's called JMML, juvenile myelomonocytic leukemia, whose only treatment is a bone marrow transplant. There was no chemotherapeutic agents that were going to help her or save her life. The only thing that those drugs would do is keep the disease at bay until she could get a transplant. Well, her best chance at finding that transplant, because, you know, for you to get a transplant, your best chance is someone that you're related to, right? Most likely a sibling who shares the same DNA as your mother and father. Unfortunately, my other two children that I have were not matches for Isabella. So we were forced to find someone to match her outside of our family. At the time, we were told that because we are Hispanic, we were going to have a hard time to find that match in the registry because there was not a big presence of Latinos in the registry. And these things are inherited. So your best chance of finding that match is going to be somebody of your same genetic background. So at the time, we were encouraged to get ourselves on television, have as many drives as possible so that we could find her match. So that began my journey into interest in this. Fortunately, my daughter did find a match. But one of the lessons learned, because I was able to take the results of the testing that was done to my children, myself and my husband, to find out that we were not matches for her, I was able to enter that into a national database that would tell me if she had a match out there. At that time, you could do that. Now you can no longer do that. And when I did that, I found that, you know, she did have one, but myself and my other two children had zero matches out there for us.
Marilyn, when one is looking for a match, did you look in other Latino communities throughout the United States? Or, you know, where did you go for help?
So the Be The Match Registry or the Give Life Registry, they're the ones that do the search for you. So when you're diagnosed with a cancer like this, the hospital initiates the search. They get in contact with Be The Match. They say, I have a patient in need. And then they search the database.
Oh, I see.
And just to give you some perspective, right now, how many people are on that registry? Over 19 million people are on that registry.
For them, got it. That's,
right? And
yes.
That's a lot. That's a lot of people.
That's
so imagine that there's a specific genetic background that can't find a match within 19 million people.
And are these, you know, as far as this group of 19 million, are they basically Western Hemisphere people? Are they from all over the world? Where are they from?
So these 19 million people that are potential donors are from the United States. So this is our own. There are international registries as well. So Be The Match has a relationship with these international registries. So if they can't find one within the United States, they then partner and try to find one outside, right? In the case of myself, I'm from Puerto Rican ancestry. So we're part of the United States. Right? And we have, there's a lot of Puerto Ricans around. You know, they're going to look within that. And, you know, we share a lot of the same genetic backgrounds as people from Santo Domingo, people from Cuba, from outside, internationally. We share a lot of the same genetic history. So, you know, they would then have searched that further had we not found her match. Like I said, fortunately, she had not one, but she had several matches within the registry when they did search. She had like four people that matched her enough to be able to do the transplant.
And may I ask, her genetic father, is he Puerto Rican also?
Yes, he is.
So that, wow, you would think, you know, again, thank God you were able to find a match. Does that match carry over to you and your other children if there would be a problem?
So,
or is that,
no, that's
a whole
one
new
of the
search?
Things that we, that's a whole new search, because as we learned, none of us were a match for her. We were half matches for her, right? Obviously, because she gets half her DNA from me, half from her dad. You know, we were each a
right.
half match, but so were her siblings, right? Every sibling has a 1 in 4 chance of being a match for a sibling, right? So I had 3 of them, and these 2 were only half matches for her. 70% of individuals searching, and I will tell you that's another statistic that, you know, boggles your mind. 70% of patients will not find a match within their family. 70%. That's a lot.
You wonder, why is that? What's the science on that? Do you know?
Well, you know, a little bit of that is, yeah, there's a, so the, what we're looking for is something called, when they do a match, right, what we're looking for is something called an HLA antigen typing, right? So HLAs
yep.
are proteins or markers that are found on the cells of your body, right? So the closer they are to you, the less likely you're going to have, indeed, you know, you're going to have side effects from it. These markers are the ones that say this belongs in your body or it doesn't belong in your body. So that if they don't match, when you get that transplant, it's going to fight it. It's going to kill it, just like a virus
right.
that enters your body.
Yep.
It's going to attack it, and that's what you don't want.
Correct. That's the downside of a non-match.
Exactly. And when
Marilyn,
we talk about DNA, we know that there's so many combinations that that's why it's that hard.
Yes. And Marilyn, you know, with regard to our audience and maybe educating us in general, if one wants to be part of this National Bone Marrow Registry or Be the Match Registry, could you tell us a couple things? What exactly do they do? What kind of testing is done on the donor? And then again, if there is a match, which tissues are they taking for the recipient?
Okay, so
go ahead.
In order to join the registry, there is a very simple swab of the inside of your cheek. And I think everybody is familiar with swabbing these days, unfortunately due to COVID, right? But this is not in your nose, so it's not uncomfortable. It's not like that. It's easier than brushing your teeth. You take a cotton, a Q-tip that goes inside your cheek. You do it for 10 seconds each side, and you send this away to the company, and then they process it and look at your DNA, and they look at these protein types. That simple it is to just join the registry. Once you're found to be a match with someone, it's additional blood work. So they want to match you up at a higher level. Once they feel that you're that close, then they do some blood work on you. No different than when you go to the doctor's, you go to a lab and get some blood work done. Then they find out if you're a closer match for that. In 70% of the cases, when you go on to donate, let's say that you are a match for someone, right? So if you are a match, for 70% of those people, it's as simple as taking blood. Right? It's called peripheral blood stem cells. So they take the blood, you lay in a hospital, you're watched by nurses, they take the blood from one arm, they take out the stem cells that they need, the rest of it is given right back to you. Right? That sounds simple. You know, there is some medication that you would have to take when you're getting ready for this, and described by a lot of donors as they feel just like sometimes people get when they get the flu shot, they feel a little bit off, a little bit down, like they're about to be ill, right?
Yeah.
But they quickly recover. By the next day, they're in full force. You know, they're up and about and doing
yes.
what they need to do. And the rest of the individuals, so this is like 85% of the people who get that. The rest of the percentage of people, they would have to go right inside your bone, the hip bone, and get the spongy material, the marrow that's actually inside the bone, and they take that out on the general
yes.
anesthesia, and that is what's given to the patients. But they try as much as possible to do it the simpler way because it doesn't involve a surgery, doesn't involve
sure,
a lot of side effects and downtime. Absolutely.
Sure.
Not a lot of downtime. You're awake, you know, you're resting, you know, it's not that complicated. Mm-hmm.
So that, Marilyn, as far as talking to our listeners and trying to promote this awareness, if they would like to become a donor, where do they go? Do they go to your website to find out where do they get the swabs? Where do they send this to? Is that the best place to do it?
So I would love for anyone who is listening to us today that is moved by this story and by the information that I'm providing to, yes, go on my website. It's izzyslegacy.com, I-Z-Z-Y-S-L-E-G-A-C-Y.com. Because everyone who joins through my website, those numbers are tallied so that the Be The Match has provided a special code that will then tell me how many people I have reached through Isabella's story that joined the registry. So on there, it's the same thing as going to Be The Match. If you wanted to do Be The Match separately, you go on there, you enter your information, you see if you meet the criteria. You also have to be between the ages of 18 and 40 to donate. So if you meet that and a couple of other health questions that they ask you, you put in your information. The kit is sent directly to your home. You don't have to go anywhere. It's postage paid. There's no cost to you. It comes to you within a couple of days. You do the swab. You send it right back. And that's it. You're in the registry.
Wow.
Then you just wait.
So that overall, for our listeners, a very easy thing to do. It takes no finances on your part or insurance information. You go ahead, you do the swabbing, it is then sent into the lab. Now, Marilyn, the next step here, if indeed there is a match and the donor is called, emailed, a letter, what is that process of notification?
All of the above. They ask you for all that information because they try to call you. They'll then either text you, email you. They'll try whatever method you provided to them to be able to contact you. Just to give you an example, I've been on the registry for almost 30 years. I joined when I was a young woman, around 25. I'm 50. I'm going to be 54 now. So, and I've never been called.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. So you could be on that registry forever and never be contacted.
Well, you know, you mentioned about, you know, between 18 and 40. But after that, even if we're in the registry, then basically they're not interested in your stem cells?
So, yeah, the when I joined, the age range was from 18 to 60. And once you join the registry, you stay on the registry until you're 60 years old. The reason why they've reduced the age to those coming on between 18 and 40 is because they've seen that the best outcome for the patient comes when the donor is younger with healthier stem cells. And believe me, if you're a recipient of this, it is a really hard process. They have to get rid of your immune system, and that's not easy. You have to undergo chemotherapy, and basically they get rid of your immune system, which is very dangerous. This is not something that you want to do over and over again. You want, when you do this, that it is successful. So the best chance at success is for when someone is that age, but let's say there is nobody there between the ages and 40 that matches you, but somebody who's on the registry who's 42, 45, even 60 is a match for you, they're going to take you. They're going to call you.
Got it.
They're going to ask for you to do that because you remain on the registry until you're 60.
Got it. I'd like to digress just a little bit, Marilyn, to let our listeners know if indeed they are a match, they need to go ahead then donate their stem cells. They would go into a hospital. They're given an order of some kind. There's no cost to them with regard to their participation in this. Am I correct?
That is correct. There is absolutely no cost to the donor. The transplant hospital arranges for everything. They don't have to. Like in my case, my donor came from Oklahoma, right, Isabella? So everything was done in Oklahoma for him. So he went to the hospital that they sent him to that was close to him. They make it very easy for you so that you can undergo the blood test, so that you can do everything that needs to happen. It is done within your hometown. And, you know, you don't have to go anywhere. And it's no cost to you. The person who's receiving the donation, their insurance pays for everything to be done. I also want to mention that you're not obligated to donate. By joining the registry doesn't mean, let's say that you're not in a position to do that at this time, right? You can say no. You know, there's nobody's going to come and pick you up at your house and say, you have to do
that.
You know, this is all voluntary. And
wonderful.
I want everybody to know that also.
Yes. And Marilyn, you know, as far as the process, is it like when one donates blood? Is that what an analogy would be with regard to this donation from the donor?
Yeah.
Does that simplify it somewhat?
85%. Yeah, 85% of the cases. So the majority of the cases are done that way.
Wonderful. And then, you know, Marilyn, with regard to when one donates, is there a communication cycle down the road letting the donor know that he, she helped a six-year-old child or anything like that? Or is there no communications permitted due to HIPAA?
Initially, the person is told there is a person, let's say it is a six-year-old. There's a six-year-old in this that needs you, that's suffering from cancer. My donor was told it was a baby who was in need of a transplant. But that's all the information that you're told. You're not told any where they live. You're not known any kind due to HIPAA. So that's all you know. And the person who's receiving the donation knows absolutely nothing about the donor, zero. So years later, like there's a wait time, and after that wait time, either one can initiate, I would like to send them a letter of thank you, or I would like to meet them, and if the other person agrees, then they can meet.
Got it. And so a beautiful cycle of action is the way it sounds. Marilyn,
absolutely.
With regard to risk for a donor, again, just to make that clear, there's no risk of any disease to the donor or any leukemia to the donor or any downside the donor would have in this process, correct?
No, not at all, because the donor is the one giving their blood to someone else. You know, they're giving their stem cells to someone else. So they're not receiving anything they're giving. And in the case of, that's why there's so much medical screening, because then the recipient has the one that has, you know, the chance of getting something from their donor. So they're screened, and you have to make sure that you're in good health so that you're not giving the person something, you know?
Got it. Yes, exactly. And, you know, Marilyn, just maybe it's off the wall a question, but indeed, is there ever any financial compensation to the donor for this? Or can they ask for compensation? Or in your experience, have people ask for compensation?
I have never heard of that, but no, there is absolutely no compensation. This is completely 100% voluntary. There should never be a request for compensation. You know, changes the dynamic of this whole thing.
Yes.
And I think
indeed,
that's why the privacy things are in place.
Got it. No, beautiful. Again, I wanted to ask the questions all the way around this, just so our listeners will get a real good feel for all this. You know, Marilyn, continuing on this.
That's a good question.
Well, thank you. You know, the other concern, we talked about the registry. One word that comes up quite frequently is diversity in this National Bone Marrow Registry. Do you want to talk about that a little bit?
So why do we need diversity in the registry? And I'm going to share statistics again. If you're white, you have a 79% chance of finding your match in the registry. If you're Hispanic, Latino, like myself, that drops to 48% that I'm going to find a match in that registry. If you're black, that drops to 29%. And if you're of mixed ethnicities, meaning half black, half white, half Asian, half anything, if you're mixed, that drops even further, because it makes that your typing is that more complicated, because you have a lot more combinations within your DNA because of it. So it makes it harder. So the more people that join that are of diverse backgrounds, the better it is.
Wonderful.
And I just
want to
share, if I could share a little story about that. Isabella's donor is white, right? So when I did get to talk with him, and I said, you know, how is it? I had to ask the question, how is it that you match the little Puerto Rican girl, right, from New Jersey? I have to ask, because they talk so much about this ethnic background. And he shared with me that his paternal grandmother was from Mexico. So he had some diversification in his background. He had Latino diversity in there, and it was enough, even better than her mother and father, enough for her to be matched with this gentleman.
Wow, what a beautiful story. And Marilyn, how were you able to contact him? How could you get to him and ask him that question?
So I had reached out years later. I always thought about him. I always prayed for him. I the donor, I didn't know man, woman. I didn't know who he was because I wasn't given that information. And I said, you know, he was made aware that my daughter has passed away a year later. And I said, you know what, he must be, I don't know what he's thinking, but I want him to know how grateful we were for his donation because it was successful. I was able to have 6 more months with my daughter because of the successful donation. She unfortunately passed because she developed an infection. Because her immune system was compromised, she got an infection, and that unfortunately is what overtook her body, right? It had nothing to do with his donation. And I felt that I wanted to let him know that, even if it was anonymously, even if he didn't want to share with me who he was, I wanted to send him a letter. So I reached out to Be the Match, and I asked them, was there a way that I could send a letter to him letting him know how much we value his donation and how important he is to our family?
Wow.
And they said, absolutely. They had me fill out the stuff, and they sent it to him, and he said, I would love to talk to them. Were able then to exchange phone numbers, and, you know, and it was so many years after losing her, and, you know, he was suffering. He was hurt knowing that she didn't survive, and he didn't know that it wasn't because of his donation. So that was like a weight off his shoulders knowing that it was successful.
You know, what a touching story. And, you know, how emotional your life has been through this with your firsthand experience. And, you know, Marilyn, I'd like to go to the phones, and maybe I think Mark has questions for us. If you wouldn't mind at this point having a little break. We'll see what the questions are and see if we can help our listeners. Mark, are you ready?
Absolutely.
I am ready. Matt from Rialto basically says, I got a doc and a nurse. I don't think I need a hospital.
Thank you.
Denise from San Francisco. Hi, Marilyn. How do you sustain the drive losing a kid? You are a blessing to a lot of us that give up on the little things.
Beautiful.
Hey, Denise.
Go ahead,
yeah,
Marilyn.
Yeah, that was beautiful.
You know,
Denise,
have
that's
energy.
The one.
Yes.
That's the
no,
number one question I am asked in regards to how do you sustain a loss like this. I think it's one of the worst losses a person can imagine is losing a child. And one of the biggest questions I get asked is about my faith. How can I continue to have faith? And my answer to that is, how can I not? You know, if I don't have faith, then I lose faith that I will ever see her again, that I will ever be with her again. And, you know, finding purpose through that pain is the most important thing. And that's why, one of the reasons I wrote the book is being able to emerge from that pain, but making sure that everything that my daughter went through was not for nothing, that everything that she went through, there was a reason behind it. I had to find the reason for it, and I did many times over. And, you know, sharing it with people and sharing her story keeps her alive, not only in my heart and mind, but in the heart and mind of others. And being able to save lives is number one.
Thank you, Marilyn. Beautiful. Mark, do you have anything else for us?
Yeah, Robin coming in from Ohio. She's a regular. She goes, no cure for cancer, but we can send people to the moon. Unbelievable.
True story. True story.
She's right. I think we're working on it. You know, we're going to the moon again. But indeed, we would like to have a cure for cancer and to salvage our young people. A six-month-old child shouldn't die from cancer. So we'd like to improve the quality of everyone's life here. You know, even though I've always said we have the best health care in the world. So go ahead, Mark.
Yeah, I'll throw a few more, and I'll let you guys get back to this great story. Mary Ann, our great moderator out of Philadelphia's WWDB, is listening now live. So big shout-out to Mary Ann. Yeah. Gail from Clearwater, Florida. Yeah. She goes, "Hi, doctor. This guest is amazing. I heard her in Philadelphia's WWDB. Marilyn is an inspiration across this country. I need to get her book."
Beautiful.
Yeah.
Speaking of that, the book, I believe, is not published yet, Marilyn. It's to be released in the first quarter of next year.
January 7th. It's available on Amazon, but you can pre-order the book right now, and you'll get an autographed copy from me with a personal message, and that is through my website. The same website, izzyslegacy.com. You can pre-order your copy right now.
Marilyn, what is the cost of the book? Would you mind sharing that?
$20 right now.
Good. And,
through me.
And who's your publisher?
So it's self-published.
Okay.
It's a self-published book.
Beautiful. And Marilyn, I know in addition to writing this and sharing all this, you know, talking about emotional trauma, grief, you know, even with the 9/11, indeed, you're going to donate proceeds from this sale to this registry, of course, Be the Match Registry. Am I correct on that to support this?
It is. It's going to the Isabella Morales Foundation. So that is a foundation that we are developing in order to continue to bring education and awareness for the need of diversification in this registry. One of the things that I've learned over the years on why people don't donate, one of the biggest questions I get is, why don't people get on that registry? Why is it so hard, right? Is because they don't have the knowledge, right? Lack of knowledge on exactly what we're talking about. How is the process? How easy it is? What are the side effects? All those things. And not only that, but in people's native languages. So I'm Hispanic. I can speak to it because I'm a medical professional, to in their own language, in Spanish, to help them to understand why it's needed and to build that trust level with people of different ethnic backgrounds on why it's needed.
Wonderful. And Marilyn, is the book being published in Spanish as well, or are you just doing an English version at this point?
No. There's going to be a Spanish version that's coming out in March of next year. And I hope to bring that to Puerto Rico first.
There's going to be a
Spanish version. We have to have a Spanish version.
Wonderful. Do you plan on having this book in other, say, foreign countries, not just U.S., you know, Mexico?
I hope so.
Okay.
Yeah,
so
that's
very, very
absolutely.
Good.
That is, yeah, internationally, I think it's needed. So we're starting off with the United States, which is, you know, obviously where we're from, and Puerto Rico and anybody who's Spanish-speaking. We have a lot of different – within the United States, we have such diversity that being able to meet the people where they are right here in the United States is needed here. So let me start with my people right here in the United States, and let's expand as fast as possible. But I want to start with my people right here.
Beautiful. Marilyn, is there another book on the horizon?
Of course. unfortunately, I have many stories. Yeah, I have many, many, many stories. My story began with PTSD. As a public health nurse, I was, you know, working in Manhattan near the World Trade Center when they were hit. So I was on the ground, on the street, when it happened, and there were things there that I saw that I can never unsee. And I say that, you know, the story for those people ended that day. Their story ended and my story began. You know, as a nurse and, you know, as a physician, we see death all the time. That's not, unfortunately, that's not something that we don't know about. We do know about that. We have intimate knowledge of people's passing. But this was different. You know, we talk about PTSD and we think about veterans of war. But the war was brought to us. It was brought to the civilians, and we were not ready. We were not ready. I wasn't ready.
Correct.
I suffered.
And you're talking about 9/11.
Because of what I saw.
Yes.
September 11th.
You know, Marilyn, if I could expand your background here. You know, you're a registered nurse. But, you know, also, you have a very sophisticated background in holistic wellness, correct? Where you talk about a variety of different treatments and methods to help emotional trauma and grief. Is that correct?
That is correct. And you want me to speak on why did I choose holistic nursing?
I would like to do that, but you know what I'd like to talk about? In addition, you know, there's many modalities of therapy that we use today. And, you know, typically we have traditional medicine, but we're seeing a lot more of a holistic approach by patients to disease. And one thing that really intrigues me is the Reiki therapy. You know, you are a Reiki master, and I think you're bringing some of that knowledge, some of that point of view to what you've been talking about as well. Could you help us with that?
Right. So Reiki is one of those complementary modalities, right? So there's a lot of things, acupuncture, aromatherapy, Reiki therapy. And we're talking specifically about Reiki. It falls into the realm of energy therapy. When I describe it to people, it's not exactly hands-on because we work outside of your body field, right? We're all made of energy outside of us, and we know that. This is scientifically proven because if you take one of those photos that people like to take of what your energy field looks like outside of your body, right, we can take a photograph of that, and we can see that. So this is something that we know exists, the energy outside of our body. Illness begins in that energy field before it hits your physical body. Right? So when we talk about somebody who's physically ill, there are holes in your energy field when you're not well. And what Reiki does is it helps to fill those holes by utilizing universal energy. So the energy that flows through the practitioner, it's not my energy, right? It's just something that I've learned to harness the universal energy to be able to heal the holes in yours. So you're doing the healing. Right? The person themselves is self-healing like that. I know the analogy that I like to use is very simple. It's like when you have a car and your battery has died, right? What do you do to restart that car battery? Is you need some jumper cables, right? So my hands are those jumper cables, bringing that energy from one car to the other in order to start it back up again. It's exactly what we're doing with Reiki. We're transferring energy from one place to another to allow your body to heal itself because our bodies have the ability to do that. We just have to help it.
And again, the basis of this therapy from our research, it was of Japanese origin, correct?
That is correct.
Founded this and then matured this and then applied it. So it sounds like a fantastic therapy. Where do you think that's going in this country now, you know, with regard to practitioners, alternative medicine? Go ahead.
Well, look, this is one of the first things as I was going through my holistic nursing training. It's been in existence for a while. People just don't hear about it. It's used in hospitals right now. It is used in a lot of different places right now to help people manage their pain, manage their anxiety, manage their stress. It's already being used. It is helping people to use less narcotics after surgery. So if somebody wanted to just Google where is Reiki used in the United States, you will see all the different hospitals that are using that as complementary medicine, meaning it does not replace traditional medicine. We will never say that. It only works to enhance what is already being done. It's complementary. Doesn't replace it.
You know, say having said that, with regard to implementation, are patients able to request it? Again, we're here in Western Central Pennsylvania. You don't hear a lot about this. You know, is it something that's more in the big sophisticated centers that have these alternative type programs? And, you know, can they be instituted in more rural settings? What are your thoughts?
I think it's all over. I think a lot of people just don't know about it. Like I said, it's been around for many, many, many years back when I was very young. So like I said, over 30 years, I've known about all these modalities. I've used them in order to help myself heal from a lot of different things. And that's why I'm so passionate about it. It's just a matter of you doing a simple Google. We all have our phones. Everybody's got a smartphone, right? All you do is Google it and where can I find it? You're going to find a practitioner anywhere outside of medical facilities. There are people that do private practice that do this. I was one of them that was doing this privately, right? Where I would go to a patient's home that needed it and what they needed it for. A lot of hospice, end-of-life organizations, sure, they use Reiki as well for pain management and anxiety,
wow,
management.
Which I think is an excellent tool to decrease anxiety, decrease emotional stress with these very difficult transition in our beingness. You know, Marilyn, when you grew up, did you come from a healthcare family?
No, I did not, actually. No, I grew up in Brooklyn, New York. I come from very humble beginnings. I grew up in the low-income housing projects, the Marcy Projects, they're called. My mother always wanted to be a nurse. So when she first heard me talk about it as a toddler, you know, she encouraged me in every way. A lot of us from Latin background, there's a lot of, when we talk about holistic, my grandmother used to take the herbs out of her window and say, put the medicine away, I'm going to heal you with this. And she would concoct these teas that would heal us, that,
wow,
had the properties of antibacterial, antiviral, all these things. Grandma was the one healing us, that was taking the things from Puerto Rico and using that and say, you know, stop using this and use this, or use this with the medicine that the doctor gave you, and this is how you're going to be healed. Yet I didn't pay attention. You know, the knowledge that this woman had was incredible. And it wasn't until after losing her that I realized how valuable that information actually was.
Wow,
and I'm circling right back to it.
Yep, and I bet she never wrote anything down.
Of course not. Everything is oral history with us. You know, it's like, do this,
yes,
do that, pay. You know, and unfortunately,
yep, yep,
growing up in New York City, I didn't pay as much attention as I should have.
Well, you've learned through your life how important all these things are. Mark, do you have any,
absolutely,
more for us?
Yeah, Carl from New Rochelle says the best show keeps getting better. This lady has done it all except get the crown of Mrs. Puerto Rico.
Well, what a compliment.
If I was younger, I could have worked on it.
Beautiful. And, you know, Marilyn, have you been to Puerto Rico?
Of course, yes, absolutely. Beautiful, beautiful. I feel like I'm at home when I'm there. It's a different air. It's just a different – it's so different, you know?
Yes. You were born in the States, though.
Absolutely. Brooklyn, like I said, Brooklyn, born and raised. You can hear it in my accent.
Yeah.
It's
a beautiful
Brooklyn
accent. I love your Spanish accent also. Mark, go ahead.
Thank you.
Well, we've got Frank coming in from Bucks County, Pennsylvania. He says this is an inspiration, to say the least. I mean, to get all this great things in an hour show. Keep it going, Doc.
Thank
you.
You
have set the bar. Wow, that's unbelievable.
Well, we've been very fortunate to have excellent guests that are superstars in their field. And Marilyn, of course, is right there on top of the list for this show. And we thank her.
Thank you.
And, you know, Marilyn,
thank
go
you.
Ahead. Go ahead, Mark.
Albert from Poway coming in basically says, you know, we can learn a lot from listening to this on a weekly basis. Please don't archive any more shows, Doc. I love to keep getting this each and every week. It's my fix.
Well, thank you so very much. And, again, you know, occasionally I've got to go out and I had to teach a course that I wasn't able to go ahead and be on the live broadcast. But, indeed, we're going to try to be here every week and continue. I mean, we love the listeners. We love the input. I love the emails. And like I'm saying, having people like Ms. Morales, what a superstar to grace our airwaves. Go ahead, Mark.
Mary Ann says, I'd love to get on Doc's show if you have me.
Absolutely. We'll be glad to have Mary Ann on. Let me know when she can come.
Yeah. Okay, we got let me throw one more, and I'll give it back to you guys. Steve from Corvallis, Oregon says, the symptoms of leukemia, if you don't know you have it, what is it? Is it fatigue? Is it tiredness?
Go ahead.
So it's different in every person. Tiredness are among them. Sometimes your platelets, or what helps us clot our blood, is affected, and you will have bruising. So you get bruising that you never had before, right? Broken blood vessels that you see.
Yep.
In case of my baby, she had none of the above. she was a baby.
And you were suspicious enough, Marilyn, you thought your baby wasn't doing well, but you wanted to seek health care, correct?
That's correct. She had her symptom was frequent infections. She was having fevers frequently from the time that she, like 2-3 months old, she had started getting infections. Now, of course, I'm a nurse. I'm back and forth. My husband works in New York City. He was going back and forth, and I had two other children going to school. So the germ count in our home, I'm sure, is not unlike any other American home, right?
Yes.
We thought it was just because brother and sister are sick, and she's catching it from them, and they're sharing it back and forth. Nobody thought anything worse than that until one day when I noticed because of a onesie. You know, I had bought her a pack of onesies because hers was starting to fit snug around the abdomen. I bought her the next size up. So when I took this new pack and put her on, put the onesie on, I noticed that the belly was tight. And I was like, no, 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 no. There's something wrong here. I kept being told that this was just a baby belly because our babies have bellies. And I said, no, there's something more here. There's no way that this onesie I just bought is going to fit her snug around her abdomen. This is abdominal distension. This is a swollen belly from something else. I thought it was from too many antibiotics. I thought she was now, her liver was being affected. Other organs were being affected. So when I went to the doctor, I said, I want more testing. There is no way. There's something wrong.
Yep.
And that's what led to the diagnosis.
And you probably saved her life at that point, though, also, Marilyn.
Absolutely.
They weren't.
Absolutely.
They weren't dealing
with
the issue.
I know that I did. No, and that's unfortunate. That's unfortunate.
It is. You know, a lot of us don't see some of these diseases frequently. So that overall, as a physician, maybe we don't recognize some of the telltale signs. But you're right. As far as leukemia, with regard to people coming in to the office, you know, with temperature, swollen glands, even abdominal distension in lieu of any other symptoms, one has to think of something going on hematologic overall. And, you know, I've only had two or three cases of leukemia in my practice, and both of them have been in young Caucasian females about 16 and 17 years old, were very similar, Marilyn. They had been to the doctors, the pediatricians, and, oh, yeah, ear infections. These girls need tubes. They need tubes. They need tubes. These girls didn't need tubes. There was no infection, multiple antibiotics. And then you ask the question, you know, did they do any diagnostic testing? Most of the time they have not. Well, you know, the doctor listened to her chest, felt her neck, looked in her ears, and, that didn't solve the problem. And indeed, you know, the first thing we do, now, Marilyn, when I practice, I talk about the four pillars. The four pillars typically are this to me, to my staff, to my nurse practitioners, as well as the residents that I teach. The first thing is to listen to the damn history. You know, the patient tells you what the problem is. It's listening.
Mm-hmm.
Number two is examination. Examine the patient. And, you know, that's almost a lost art today. You know, people from what I see and what I'm training young residents, they don't know how to look in the ears, look in the nose, look in the mouth, listen to the chest, palpate the abdomen. They've lost that art.
Right.
They go to number three, diagnostic testing. Everybody gets a CT scan, you know, those kind of things. And there's a place for diagnostic testing, but it's after pillar one, pillar two, then pillar three. And then I tell them, then it's time for pillar number four. It's decision-making. What are we going to do for this child? And, Marilyn, if we don't know, then get the goddamn patient out of the practice. Send the patient to somebody that might be able to help them. Don't hang on to them and put them on drugs. That's what I think some of the problems with medicine are today. But in your case, thank God,
correct.
You were persistent
of
what you did.
Yeah.
And indeed, again, you've done wonderful things for your family, but also for this country. So go ahead, please.
I think the number one thing that I tell people is you know your body the best. And as a mom, you know your children the best. And if you don't advocate for yourself or your family, who will? Right? So don't worry about being labeled a problem or a PIA. Right?
Yep.
Because ultimately, who does that affect? Only you. So do what you need to do. If you have an instinct, a gut, something telling you something is off, stay with it. Insist on these testing. I want it because what does it cost the doctor to order this test? Nothing. Zero.
Correct.
Your insurance is paying for it, which is what I did that day. I said, I don't want to hear about another script. I want A, B, and C done.
Correct.
And that's what happened.
And Marilyn, do you agree with me on this? You know, if you're going to a healthcare professional and you're telling them these things, communicating this, and they're not absorbing it, they're not taking it and trying to run with it, and they're pushing it under the rug, is it time to find
right.
another provider?
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Because the big
Absolutely.
Thing is the communication. You know, doc, listen to me. This is what's going on with me, my child. And if they kind of push it under the rug, then maybe it's time to go find somebody else that'll listen and care. Because as you've said, you know your body, you know your baby better than a nurse practitioner or a PA. So I really appreciate that input. I think it's excellent.
Absolutely. And in our case, the doctor did listen. You know, it took a little bit more prompting, but she did listen. And I know for a fact that that practice changed significantly after this encounter. They never treated another patient the same way again.
Absolutely. Absolutely. You know, for medicine, you know, we call it the practice of medicine. And indeed, there are many lessons for us as doctors, practitioners, to learn. And that's how
Absolutely.
We get good. You know, we learn, you know, from our mistakes. But, you know, the other
Absolutely.
Thing, Marilyn, that I find very interestingly is that all patients are a little bit different. You know, we're
mm-hmm.
treating a patient, not a disease. And indeed,
That's
I think
right.
we as physicians and practitioners need to listen to our patients and then go from there.
Number
go
one
ahead.
Thing is to listen. Of all your pillars, number that's it. Listen.
That's it.
Listen. Listen.
I agree.
Yes.
Mark, we're getting close to the end here. What else do you have for us?
Yeah, let me throw in a few more. Darren coming in from Flagstaff, Arizona, said he's a first-time listener through some friends of his, and we appreciate you, Darren, listening to the show. He says, to Marilyn, have we moved more to where we have some more things taken care of with this dreadful disease since you lost your child? Have we progressed to the point where it's kind of like cancer, we've tried to work it where we can, you know, at least move it to the forefront?
I'm glad for that question.
Yeah, that's a good one.
I think I know where he's going with that. That is absolutely a good one because that's what motivated me to write the book. So just to give some perspective, my oldest daughter, who was 10 years old at the time that she lost her sister, is now 24. She now works for Be The Match, right? So now she works for this organization who's doing things, fantastic things for people like us. And she shared with me that she still has difficulty finding matches for the same patient. She had a Hispanic patient and a Black patient, and they couldn't find a match. This is 19 million people in this registry.
Wow.
Almost 500,000 cord blood units that can also be used, and they have no matches. So in January of this year, when she said, Mom, I just want to share this with you, I was like, oh, my God. I said, we need to do something more. I need to do something more to bring attention to this. That's where the book came out. That's where me speaking came out. I've never done this. This is outside of my comfort zone, speaking in public, on shows and things like that. But I decided in January that if I don't do this, who is going to do it? We're still in the same boat. Juvenile JMML leukemia can still only be treated with a bone marrow transplant. There have been some advances in the way that it's treated and kept at bay with chemotherapy, but every patient still needs a bone marrow transplant. Still.
Wow. Beautiful question. Beautiful answer, Marilyn. Go ahead.
Yeah,
thank
let me get
question.
The other one. Fran coming in from Austin, Texas says, have you ever considered being on a board of this, Marilyn? I know you have a lot of, you know, things you're doing right now, but have you ever considered being on a board of something this powerful to get the message out? Wow, that's a good one out of Austin.
That's a great
crazy
question. No.
Busy, but go ahead, Marilyn.
Yeah, this, like I said, this all happened this year. I'm literally only months in this space and trying to bring awareness, just because my heart was moved by the information that things aren't better. And I decided to do something. So if in the future I can be a part of a board, I would love to do that. But right now is, let's get this book in the hands of people that need it. Let's get people signed up for the registry. It's not about making $1 million. It's about saving 1 million lives. If before I leave this earth, 1 million people have joined this registry, I have done my job.
Wow.
That's all I can
say. What a goal.
And let me take one more real fast. One more real fast, and I'll give it over to you. Adam from Sioux Falls basically says, my prayers and thoughts are with you, Marilyn. I can imagine when the holidays come, it must be a tough time, but God has this.
Absolutely.
Wow, that's unbelievable.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Marilyn,
how do you,
Christmas is horrible. I said,
yeah,
I always
how do you cope
is,
with that? How
horrible.
Do you keep up a good spirit with your children?
Well, I had two little guys, you know, a daughter and a son when this happened, and my mother, who I unfortunately lost in 2020, was my biggest, was my person, who said, you have to continue to live, you have to continue to move on, because you have these two other babies that are relying on you, that need you, you know? You lost one, but you still have others who need you, and you have to move forward. So the thought of them, you know, is what got me through, and to push through all of that was because I know that they needed me and that I was needed, you know? And right now, that's why my daughter Gabrielle is now doing what she's doing, because I said present, because I said we will not let this define us as a family. We will push through this, and we will move forward.
Wow. And how does your husband play into all this, Marilyn? You know, it has to take a lot of your time, your energy, your attention units. How do you all as a family function then?
Yeah, I couldn't do it without him. We still have, after Isabella, I had a little baby, my rainbow baby. His name is Lorenzo. He is now 11. Our oldest is going to be 25. I have a 22-year-old and him, right? And Isabella would have been 15 this year. So if it wasn't for him being able to pick that up and do running around so that I could – and keep the house quiet so that I could write when I was writing my book and doing all these things, I couldn't do it without him. So we're a team.
Thanks,
this entire family is a team. Entire family.
Wonderful. What is his name?
Sal Morales.
Let's thank him for that. You know, a shout-out,
absolutely.
Seriously. But you're right. It's
absolutely.
A team effort for all that.
100%.
Super. 100%. Nope. And Mark, go ahead.
Well, we're about ready to wrap this great show up with less than 2 minutes. Marilyn, let everybody know how they can get a hold of you. I know the book's coming out in January, and you really are a blessing across the boards here, and we're just so blessed to have you in Pittsburgh. We are so blessed to have you through Philadelphia, and it just keeps picking up steam across this media outlet.
Well, thank you so much. I'm humbled to have been asked to come on here and share my story. So I truly appreciate that from both of you. But the best way to contact me is through the website, izzyslegacy.com. You can send me messages there. You read about me, my mission. You join the registry. It's a one-stop shop. And if my story has moved you, you can pre-order my book, and you'll get a signed autographed copy from me right through that website, izzyslegacy.com.
And Marilyn, what about your foundation? What do you, do you want people donating to your foundation as well?
So we're in the process of building that up, and that's why we're doing the book, and the proceeds of that book is going to go to fund that foundation. So the Isabella Morales Foundation is what's being started. That will be up and running by the beginning of next year, and you know we're hoping to be able to make a huge impact with that. So the first start of that is me being able to speak, sharing the book with everyone. In addition to that, inside every book, there's a special code that you can join the registry by scanning that code that's inside every book. So I say that every book sold is a potential life saved.
Wow. Fantastic.
And Doc, Mark, as we give it over to you, I know you got a great show coming up next week. If you want to tease it a little, let everybody know how they can get a hold of you in that greater Pittsburgh area, including that fine staff that you've put together.
Well, thank you for the compliments. Thank you to the listeners. Marilyn Morales, thank you so much for being with us on this Saturday morning, and good luck to all you with that. You can get a hold of
thank
me
you.
At GJRMD308Outlook.com. You know, with Thanksgiving coming up, I've had several emails, you know, talking about eating disorders. And, you know, we've had something called dysphagia, which is difficulty swallowing. And there's also an entity called esophageal cancer, which many people die from with dysphagia. Next week, we're having a gastroenterologist from Washington, D.C., that's an expert in this field, to talk to us about swallowing, GERD, dysphagia, as well as esophageal cancer. So that's next week, Mark.
Unbelievable as it keeps getting better and better. For Marilyn Morales out there in Jersey, Doc Greg Roscoe out there in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, yours truly, Mark Mancini, saying catch this archive version on blogtalkradio.com/Mancini Sports. Pass the message. This show is sweeping the country, and we're just so blessed to produce it each and every week for you great listeners. Till next week, have a blessed one. Stay safe, and thank you very much for tuning in.
Thank you all very much.